Bum 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 bum. Background information to the game. About 500,000 years ago, the Galaxy Empire, which had reigned the galaxy for an era lasting 150 million years, collapsed. After that time, as a result of more than 1,000 years of factional wars, two very large military groups appeared. They were the Zentoradi and the Patrollers. The heroic wars which have taken place over the galaxy region have continued for 500,000 years. Until the present time. The military technology of the two great powers is fairly equal, but at present, the Zentoradi have an advantage over the Patrollers slightly. In July of 1999, a very large damaged spaceship of the Patrollers left the warfront for a remote star, Earth, which lacked any strategic value. As a result of the impact of the crash landing, the land surface suffered catastrophic... The land surface? Oh, the... I guess, like, the land... The surface of the land suffered catastrophic damage, is what they want to say. However, this damage to the Earth's surface was not the only effect of the landing. The inhabitants of the star inspected the spaceship while they reconstructed the damaged area, and, by so doing, became aware of the large-scale war going on in space where they themselves had been planning to visit. How ironic. In addition, the presence of the warship caused instability and disrupted the world situation, which had maintained balance, leading to an outbreak of a combined war. Nevertheless, the combined war ended, without developing into a worldwide war, and a combined government was established. During that period, collection of data from the spaceship and repairs were carried out, and in July 2009, 10 years after the crash, and 10 years after I started reading this, the reconstructed space warship called Macross was launched! On the very first day of the launching, Macross encountered a fleet of the Zentoradi which appeared in the solar system, and as a result, the Earth entered a state of war.
Who the hell are the Patrollers?
The Supervision Army.
Oh.
Uh-huh, see? The Valkyries make an urgent blast-off. Both the Batroid and the Fighter are on the alert. Both of them. They must defeat Rigolt, the powerful enemy.
What are you reading, it's like, Renato?
We're reading Space Fight Macross instructions. Thank you for buying Macross. Before using, please read the instructions.
Okay.
So it's an LCD game.
And the big thing about these instructions, of course, is that they are...
In Japanese?
No. It's one side's Japanese, one side's entirely in English.
I've got the Japanese one here as well.
You gonna read that?
Why not? Game no butai sette, ima kara o yoso 50 man nen mae.
Okay, anyway. just fade out of that one.
Alright, so it's May 11th.
Oh, I should do it in the Macro 7 voice. The Geppel Nietzsche.
Thank you.
It is May 11th.
Kind of
and we've got a bunch of men with beer in a closed off room on the weekend to record yet another thrilling episode of Macro Speaker Podcast. This is your sometimes host, Gwyn Campbell, on the boards known as Torchador. To my right is.
Sometimes known as Save Robotech. Indiana Macross. What other ones are I forget? I go by a save known as Adrian Lozano.
The enthusiastic. And to Adrian's right is?
Renato.
And on my left?
Gubaba, Richard.
And today we have a special guest, a friend who's popped over from the US to check out the local scene here. A Macross fan with a rather unique involvement with the series, introducing Tom Bateman. Hey there, Tom.
How you doing, Gwen?
I'm pretty good. Welcome to Japan. Welcome to Tokyo.
Ah, it's good to be back.
Welcome back.
Welcome back.
Right, how long has it been?
It's been 20 years.
20 wow. years.
20 years, courtesy of the United States Marine Corps. But it is good to be back, and it's a different country. A little bit different.
Just a little.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as we always do when we have someone here for the first time, well, on the cast for the first time, we ask you to fill us in a bit about your history with Macross.
An interesting journey.
by all means, give us the Cliff Notes version.
All right. Well, I actually think I can claim to be a Macross fan before I became a Robotech fan, because back in 1984 was when you first started seeing the toys. All the Macross toys, all the Takotogu toys were in the toy stores, and they had those illustrations on the side. So it gave a sense that, hey, there's a whole lot more than just this robot changeable, transformable plane. Yeah. You know, they had the character, they had the Hikaru or Misa on the front covers. And so I was intrigued that there was something much more on that. And of course, right there in English, it says Macross. It's like, what is this? What is this show? So every time I'm watching TV, you know, kind of gotten tired of Voltron, Battle of the Planets. So I'm ready for something more. So every time something new is coming out on TV, I'm hoping, is this Macross? Is this Macross? And then they released the Macross videotape, VHS. And I forget, do you remember how much it cost?
It was like $30. Yeah. It was not cheap for a...
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. And I didn't have any money to buy it, but I kept watching TV hoping that Macross was going to come out. And then, lo and behold, one day in March of 1985, there's the commercial, and I'm like, oh my God, this is it. This is Macross. And even though they said Robotech, I kept saying, oh, this is Macross. And when the show premiered, Codename Robotech.
Oh, so you saw Codename Robotech?
Absolutely.
Also.
Okay, yeah. March.
Friday before.
Yep. March 1st, 1985. Yeah. And I was hooked.
Right.
And it was like, it was a 90-minute, what turned out to be a 90-minute version of Glovell's report. But it was, and then from there, the next 17 weeks, it was, just absolutely hooked on it.
Yeah, I believe it aired at 5:30 in the evening, and then ended, and then Wait Till Your Father Gets Home came on after that.
Yeah, I think it was 4:30.
Yeah.
That's funny, because I was just thinking about Wait Till Your Father Gets Home earlier this week, and I have no idea why.
Well, that was, what, your adult kind of... cartoon sitcom.
Right.
It was like any adult sitcom, but it was animated. And I thought it was actually funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it wasn't raunchy like the way, like today you'd do something like Family Guy. But back then it was interesting.
Or less creative.
But Robotech was that big gateway. And it was exciting to watch it. And it was like, here's Macross. And I'm totally jonesing on that show. Through 36 episodes, and then that last, and I was absolutely not prepared for it to end. So literally when they're closing the book, I'm screaming at the TV like, no, 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 this can't end. And then I see the ad for, I see the preview for the next episode, Dana's story, and I'm like, what is this? And so I didn't understand. So then, I stuck with it the next through Southern Cross. And I think during that time, I was looking through a phone book. Because I'm all like, I want to find something on Robotech. And I'm looking through the book, looking for comic stores. And I'm living in Orange County. Open it up, and there's this. And it wasn't just a listing. It was actually a little ad in there. Little, 2-inch by 2-inch ad.
The yellow and black ad.
Little in the yellow pages. Yeah. Right in the yellow pages. And it said, Carl Masick Gallery. 755 North Glassell Street, Orange, California. And I'm like, oh, like that's got to be him. That's got to be the Carl Masick of Robotech. Mm-hmm. And I called up and asked, is that the Carl Masick of Robotech? The guy said, yeah, it is. And then I said, hung up the phone. I said, we're going there on Saturday. Me and my brother hop on our bikes right down there. We're all excited. And then he's not there. And they said, well, don't worry. He's coming in next week. So all during the week, we're all excited. Like, we're going to talk to the guy who made Robotech. And so we go into the, go there the next week and meet Carl. And, really nice. I still can remember seeing him walking down the hallway. And, I'm 14 years old at this time. But I'm excited as hell. So, and he's nice. He was really nice and really was excited that people were there to talk about the show. And I don't know if it was then, right then or shortly thereafter, but because that wasn't the only time I ever saw Carl in those first few weeks. But I think it was during the time of Southern Cross. But he was all excited and kind of entertaining our questions about it. But he was also, oh, you need to watch this. And I think it was Megazone 2-3. Huh. That, I think that was the first non-Robotech anime that I would have seen. Well, obviously.
Yeah, because it would have been out at that point. It would have just come out.
Right. But he was really excited about that. I really remember that. And then, and I think he also turned me on to, at that point, I had also got a copy of Do You Remember Love? And this was almost on a TDK VHS tape, Megazone 2-3, and Macross Do You Remember Love? And, you know, I couldn't be happier as a kid watching that. I remember, I mean, really loving Megazone 2-3, but Macross Do You Remember Love just blew my mind.
Yeah. Megazone was also the first one that I watched raw.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of my, like we did kind of a group buy where each of us put in $10 and then one of my friends bought the videotape and made copies for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I didn't understand anything about the story of Megazone 2-3.
No.
Not that it mattered, because we learned it was going to become the Robotech movie.
Right.
But what Carl originally told me about that was so much cooler than what actually came out, because he was describing a Blue Thunder like story. He says, I want the story like Blue Thunder. I just totally remember him talking about it. It says, yeah, it takes place during the Macross saga. It's going to be like a Blue Thunder like story. And I love the movie Blue Thunder. I thought that would be totally cool. Well, what eventually came out was nothing like that at all. And I never, even to this day, never got a straight answer from Carl why they changed the story. Because they actually wrote a script based on the Macross Saga time,
mm-hmm.
which I think the story would have fit much better in.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but anyway, going back to Macross, he just totally, you know, tuned me into that, and I love Do You Remember Love? And so that's, and being able to enjoy Macross kind of as Macross, away from Robotech, you know, still loving Robotech, still enjoying Robotech, but understanding that Macross could be its own different and beautiful thing on its own.
Right.
And I thought it was like, hey, I got the best of both worlds. I can mm-hmm. like both of them. And so that's what, you know, started going to Books Nippon in L.A.
Books Ripoff, you mean?
Hey. That's what the bulk of
we didn't
my
call
collection.
It that. We called it Crooks Nippon.
Yes. We called it Books Ripoff.
Crooks Nippon, I think I'd heard that. But I didn't have anything but good experiences with them. So. And they did play a leading role in getting the anime industry going in the US.
Yes,
so
yes.
Have to give it credit for that. So you know, continued being a Macross fan, you know, through flashback. And then when Macross 2 came out, very excited for that.
As were we all.
Yeah, as were we all.
And we still are.
Don't give me a dirty look, Adrian. I actually like Macross 2. I have to say that. It wasn't the greatest, but there's something about it that I still, even now, when I look at it, I like, hey, you know, I think it had some nice ideas on it, you know?
And it had nice long hair on Ishtar.
Yay.
Yes. Yay. Great songs.
Yeah.
Love those.
Yeah.
I thought U.S. Rendition did a really good job on the CD. I don't think the dub was that great, but I think it was important for American fandom, certainly.
Yeah, yeah.
But then Macross Plus, won't talk about Macross 7. I saw that when I was over at the station. I got up on Sunday morning to watch that. Didn't really like it, but I guess, you know, hey, it just wasn't my cup of tea.
You'll get there.
Okay. I'll promise to give another shot. So I'm excited to see that, you know, Macross has continued to develop, you know, with Frontier. Looks, you know, when I watched Frontier, I was really excited that they've done something interesting, new. They're not just trying to mimic the original show. I mean, there's some certain things that are consistent with the original show, but they're not trying to just simply rehash that story.
Right.
And that's something really good. And it's cool going on and seeing that, hey, you know, this Macross thing is continuing. And that's good for the fans.
Right, so you enjoyed Frontier. I mean, none of those elements from 7 that turned you off it that may have been present in Frontier
mm-hmm.
Hit you in a similar way?
Well, no one flies a Valkyrie with a guitar in Frontier.
I mean, that was the thing that probably kind of struck me as absurd. I think there were some things about Seven that kind of struck me. But I think I go just being kind of more of a, you know, maybe the mindset of an American fan is a bit more, we like the more hard sci-fi, you know, we're not really that all into the singing part of it. And I think, like, what my expectations, like, I would say Macross Plus was much more in line with what my expectations of a Macross story would have been, and Macross 7 was absolutely not. Right. So I just think, you know, it was just going to what my mindset was at the time, and it's not a reflection on the show itself.
I've always thought about it this way. In the 80s, you had the show Macross, and it had some silly elements, but it had some really hardcore science fiction elements as well. And in the 90s, they split them up into two separate things that came out at the same time.
Right.
The silly stuff and the hardcore stuff. Mm-hmm. And then for Frontier, they just brought them back together again. So it's
a good balance.
It's good, yeah. It's a really good balance, really, because it really makes Frontier a more
complete show.
What's the word I said? I used the word holistic before. Right. We were having curry. I don't know why.
Where does Zero fit into this equation?
It does not. So,
well, it's funny how it seems like most of the hardcore serious ones are the ones that Ichiro Itano works on.
Yeah, I think I heard a story, again, I don't remember where I heard it, but he took one look at the preliminary Fire Valkyrie designs and said, no, I'm not doing the show.
Huh.
And left.
Well, that was the designs where the Valkyrie had a giant guitar, right?
Yeah, and had, like, goggle eyes. Right.
Wait, right. The Valkyrie itself had a giant guitar, not just the car.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Initially. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have gone for that either.
And it had, like, you know... Well, there were lots of different designs.
It was almost like a Gal Geiger, kind of like a hair.
Yeah, right. That's what I was going to
like
say.
Like a glam
like a stage
metal
costume.
It was a glam
metal
mech, basically.
Yeah.
Valkyrie.
And the producer said, you know, you got to tone it down a little bit. Give it a gun.
See, and he was like, it could have been worse.
So then he had the idea for the launcher pod after that. He only came up with the launcher pod where he launched missiles because they wouldn't let him have a giant guitar in the show. But there is one illustration of the Fire Valkyrie with a Fire Valkyrie-sized Bassera guitar.
Yeah, it's right? At the Fire Bomber. Mm. A photocopy.
Oh, is that it? Oh, okay.
In there, so they've got the settings documents, photocopy book, right. Those folders.
Well, it's also in the Shoji Kawamori design works.
Oh, is it? Okay, well, there you go.
One of them.
So, Tom, when you're watching Frontier, like, how did... Viewing it, because it goes from kind of contemporary anime to homage to the old series... Like, how did you take that in? Did you not like it at times? Did you like it? Could you watch it all the way through without any complaints?
Oh, I was able to watch it through without any complaints, and I actually appreciate the nods to the old show, like the part where they find the Macross, and then the end credits has the Do You Remember Love song. I thought that's cool.
Or the one where they had the end credits where it was the scrapbook. With all the photos in it, it's the hand moving the book, you know. Uh-huh.
That was the Culture Edition.
No, that was that was episode 24.
Was it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't the ending. I think that was the next episode preview.
Oh, okay.
And to,
you're right.
To bring that full circle, well,
I
won't go into too much detail on this now, but the end of Macross 30 has a touch screen on a version of the photo album.
Oh, really?
Huh. Where they're going through pictures from the show, but it's a flat monitor where they're swiping the pages.
Oh, is it literally a hand?
Yeah, it's like a hand going swiping.
I totally did not get that.
And I was like, wow, that's kind of a nice touch.
Well, cool. It would have been a nice touch if it was actually 2D, but it's all 3D. So it looks kind of goofy.
Yeah, the hand itself, yeah.
Yeah, the hand turning the pages, like the CG hand.
Yeah.
And the menu system is kind of really like 90s looking. Kind of like a 3D 90s design, and that was pretty cheesy.
Yeah, well, Japanese web pages look like 90s.
This is true.
Yeah. Not all of them anymore.
Nichimo, remember we looked at Nichimo? Nichimo homepage for the, when we did the stamp kit.
Yeah, because that's probably the last time they updated the stamp
in
the 90s.
No, remember, there were new stuff. They were talking about what it came out in like
2012,
2013.
Okay.
Anyway.
So,
yeah. Anyway, Tom, I think you're fairly unique among a lot of the both us and the people we get on the cast in that Macross was not only a personal passion for you, but something that affected you professionally.
Mm-hmm.
So would you like to fill us in on a bit of your history there?
Yeah, well, I think it would start officially any work that I did with Harmony Gold was when I helped organize the 10th anniversary Robotech convention. This was
what would that be?
That, oh my god, you actually have a path.
This has got my Saturday badge.
Adrian, wow. you only bought a one-day membership. Come on, man, you couldn't buy the whole... We needed people buying the full three-day membership.
Colton CA.
What year was this?
Do you think I could have pulled my girlfriend to go with me 2 days in a row?
This is 10th.
Noted.
It must be 95.
Noted.
Yeah. Yep, that's Aiden Lozano, Colton, California. Member number 95-0463M. What's M stand for?
I'm trying to remember. I think another friend who was doing the badges came up with whatever numbering thing. 95 is obviously the year. Now, I have no idea.
Why do you have this in Japan, Adrian?
Yeah, that's a prize memento. I'm honored that he kept that.
I actually brought this back about 4 years ago when I went home. I brought all my con badges and pamphlets from everything I've done because a lot of people here are doing research, so I try to give it to them. Yeah. Don't give it to them, lend it to them when they do research. So, and, of course, I include this in all the anime events I've gone to. The one thing I remember about this con, I remember sitting through a couple of talk shows, but what I bought the most there was Macross 7 goods. I brought the This Is Animation special book.
Uh-huh.
I bought the SM CDs for
Sunmei.
Yeah, Sunmei. The bootleg CDs.
Those bring back memories.
Yeah.
For so I did, and at that time I didn't really like 7 for the show, but I loved the music, and of course I wanted the books for the Mikimoto concept designs.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was a great con. I was there.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with that. I never ran a con before, never had even been on a staff of a con before, and my brother and I were like, hey, how hard can this be? Yeah, I remember me and my brother were, it almost came to blows the morning it started. We were just on edge, but walking out and seeing people lined up for Robotech, for the Robocon 10, it was just exciting. And then the actors, the Robotech actors had never had any interaction with the fans, so they didn't even know what to expect, but they came and they were blown away. And a lot of these actors have had long careers in the voice acting industry. Robotech was, for most of them, was their first gig, and they even to this day say, yeah, we still get asked about that even on professional jobs. People ask us, oh, you worked on Robotech, because it's like, if you were part of Robotech, you were part of that original like band. Mm-hmm. And so in that industry, you know, to see so many of them still continuing in the voice acting business and being not just still actors but being directors and really being the forces behind that industry. I mean, you know, my hat's...
Or producers of Power Rangers.
Yes, yes. And he has, if you ever talk to Tony Arias, very interesting stories about how his Robotech notoriety has carried him through that. Some of the people who starred on the show just kind of freaked out when they found out that you're Rick Hunter. And I think they've all been like really appreciative of where Robotech was, or as how that affected their professional lives and kind of gave them their start. It was a good experience, and we were able to kind of acknowledge that with the 10th anniversary Robotech convention. But then that eventually led to me working for Harmony Gold for 7 years. And that was an experience that kind of runs the gamut of all sorts of emotions. So, well, I worked for Harmony Gold for, you know, about 7 years, and you know, all sorts of projects were, you know, happened during that time. You know, one of the first ones that we were involved in was the DVD release through Animego Shin Kurokawa's amazing work in remastering the original Macross series for American release, subtitled, and he really just put so much work into that. Kind of sat in awe of that. Didn't really have, wasn't involved intimately with it, but it came around the time that we were, Harmony Gold was getting involved in relaunching Robotech, and also Macross was a part of that because Harmony Gold is the official rights holder to Macross outside of Japan, and part of that is to produce product that is based on Macross. So, you know, along with the DVD box set, you know, they came up with the toys from Toynami with the Macross brand on it, clothing items and other material. You know, that's you know, part of being a dutiful rights holder. And I think the fans responded to that. The sales for the DVD were pretty good. Sales for some of the Macross items have been good.
The Animago DVD sets, those sold out completely, right?
I remember we had a lot of them left over for...
Oh, really?
Well, okay. When I say a lot, I mean, okay. When I say a lot, I'm talking about our individual, like, web store, but as far as the overall sales, we're all pretty good.
Okay.
All the sales
figure... Better than for the ADV version.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You know, the ADV came, like, really, like, toward the end of my involvement with Harmony Gold, but I thought that was... I'll say that was a train wreck.
Yeah, well, and it just came, like, just a couple years after the Animago one, and it was like, well, why?
Well, yeah, I think that you need to have something new and exciting to show people, but I think Matt Greenfield had the idea that, well, let's have a dub. Mm. Let's redub it, and I haven't been able to listen through a whole episode. I thought that was just... and I think the general response to it has been pretty negative.
Yeah.
You know, God bless, you know, Mariajima, but...
She was good, yeah.
what they're referencing, the answer man column, the person who wrote in actually really liked it.
Yeah.
He really liked it.
Yeah, he was praising, you know, Victoriana and...
Answer man on Anime News Network today just had a question where someone wrote in about the watching the ADV dub of Macross on Hulu and just really, really being into it.
Yeah, like
wow.
Yeah,
because we were talking about this yesterday.
Yes,
and we both kind of shared the same opinion as kind of a wasted venture.
But I think we come from an admittedly biased position because we've had. You know, at the time, we would have had 20 years of watching
Rules.
Macross as Macross, especially watching the original series, you know, and going through the Animago release. So you get very used to those voices.
Yeah.
And also, in addition, I'm very used to the Robotech voices. So I have two sets of voices I'm already used to. Throw in a third one, and it just... You know, how do you objectively
fourth if you include Clash of the Bionoids?
No.
And Clash of the Bionoids, I get asked a lot about that. Like, why didn't Harmony Gold do anything about that? And it's like this was released in what? Who knows about the what is it? Is it called the Hong Kong dub, or is there how did that Clash of the Bionoids come about? To begin with.
It was a cut version of the Do You Remember Love official movie dub.
But there is an uncut version. Here.
They actually made an official dub version, but they've never released it?
Yeah, Adrian's got it right here.
Oh, actually, I've got two versions of it.
Wait.
Okay. It's...
How did you get this?
Hold on, let me get it.
Well, let me see this. Okay,
so
this
that's is what it's called. Super, yeah, Super Space Fortress.
Super Space Fortress Macross.
Yeah, because I had this on. I have this on VHS. Yeah.
Produced by Big West, Tatsunoko Productions, MBS Shugakukan, planned by Studio Nue, story by Shoshikawa Mori, screenplay by Sukihiro Tomita, etc.
Yeah, no, this is just the regular credits. So, this is not...
Okay, so this here, you're saying this is the official English language release of, but then Clash of the Bionoids
is
the same but cut out. Cut the nudity, cut the violence, cut
okay. Right.
And they released this in full in the UK.
So anyways, I'm just going to go throw this out here. I'm not saying this is how it was done, but because Toho was the distributor of the original Do You Remember Love movie in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So they probably, I think it's Toho that went and had it dubbed with their own dubbing studio that was doing the Godzilla movies and the Hong Kong
Because you can recognize some Godzilla voices.
Yeah.
Oh,
from the 70s all the way to the early 80s, right. Godzilla's. The same voice actors are playing the characters in Macross.
Yeah.
Now, the story, as I understand, of how the Clash of the Bionites got to either the UK or got to the United States, where it was, you know, released on that on VHS, cheap, you know, this Four Kids brand.
Yeah.
Was that the Hong Kong, that a company in Hong Kong sub-licensed it out to, essentially sold the video to a American company to release it. And that company, of course, with no respect to the rights of Macross, which at that time were a bit unspecified at that time.
Well, I don't remember where the... On the back, I had the Kiseki VHS.
That's the subtitle
one. That's the subtitle one,
right, the British
one. I have that one, too.
Now,
my engine blocks are angry at me.
Yes. I don't remember it saying anything about being sub-licensed by any company that I didn't recognize.
Oh, no, I don't. This was the story I kind of heard.
Yeah.
Like, trying to piece together how it happened in the first place.
Because my guess is just Toho had international distribution rights, and they just...
I don't think Toho would have... I don't know. I don't think Toho...
Because Toho released this.
Yeah.
But they didn't release anything else.
But that's released right there for Japan.
Yeah, but there's one difference. There's one difference. This is not Bandai Visual.
Yeah,
this is Toho Video Disc.
Bandai Visual distributed everything.
But that was released for Japan
market.
Right.
Well, so, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's why I'm thinking it was a distribution deal when they did the film.
Yeah.
Toho said, well, we do have a dubbing facility.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from just distributing it and getting that money from there, we want to be able to take the content and provide it for an international market. Because Toho is the only company in Japan that deals internationally with some kind of, you know, Japanese pop culture IP.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's Godzilla or, you know, any of the old sci-fi stuff. So.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just gotten lost through the years.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, the company released the Clash of the Bionites on VHS for a few years and then disappeared, like everything else.
So
one of the problems is I remember reading that Animego actually looked into getting the rights to Do You Remember Love.
Mm-hmm.
But they couldn't figure out who actually owned them because all these companies had gone out of business and their assets had been divvied up and nobody knew who had what.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's kind of more of an answer to kind of change the subject.
Okay.
They didn't want to kind of get drawn into that because, you know, with the whole Macross license dispute that, you know, Harmony Gold and Tatsunoko and Big West all found themselves in the early 2000s. Do you remember that was part of that?
Mm-hmm.
From what I know is that the rights to that are different in sort of the ways they were structured.
Mm-hmm.
As far as who specifically had what rights, I can tell you that Harmony Gold does have, through Tatsunoko, the merchandising rights.
Right, yeah, because they were coming out with Do You Remember Love toys.
That's why you saw the Toynami branded Do You Remember Love toys.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are, you know, were legitimate products that were there. Now, as far as the video, the movie, I always point to who owns the movie. And I'm not talking about the rights to the movie, like the right to distribute it. I'm talking about who owns the physical assets of that movie. And I don't believe Tatsunoko owns those.
Okay.
Because it's like, even if you had the right to release it,
mm-hmm.
you would have to contact the people who actually owned the movie itself.
To make a...
Correct.
Right, yeah.
And now I'm not sure what, beyond that. But it would certainly have to involve Tatsunoko.
Right.
And Big West cooperating in some way. And, of course, Harmony Gold involved in it. So, as with all things Macross, Harmony Gold would have to be involved in it.
Right.
So, the further away it is from Vic Mignogna, the better. So I don't want anything new.
Vic's a great guy, but I agree with you.
I don't.
Right for every role.
No. I agree. For Full Metal Alchemist, I think he's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not in the dubs, but I've I've seen some episodes, and I think he does do good voice acting. But
have you seen his Star Trek Continues?
Yeah, I actually watched that.
That's absolutely amazing stuff that he does on it. It's as best of a Star Trek. Yeah. I don't even want to say it's a fan film, because it's so much more than that. I would call it like a non-studio production, because it, but if you, you know, if you are a Star Trek fan, watch Star Trek Continues.
Because he plays Kirk.
He plays Kirk, and he does it in a very respectful, non-caricature way.
Yeah.
But you can tell he's having fun, and the rest of the cast is having fun of. But it's a, you know, it's a good product. They're very creative people. I just don't think Hikaru Uchiha was the right role.
Well,
for
isn't the problem with the ADV dub an issue with voice directing more than anything else?
Yeah, because they're all ratcheted up. They're all screaming at each other all the time.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the actors are great.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
They're all the accomplished. It was the stable of ADV voice actors, and they've done great work. I just I think the fact that they're the third dub, if you count Macross. I mean, if you're counting Robotech is a dub of it, and then of course us being familiar with the Japanese voices, to have another voice cast come in, and especially when I don't know, a bit over the top, I think it wasn't anything that anyone was particularly desiring.
Yeah,
and I don't. It's like when you are dealing with the anime market or any market in entertainment, you've got to give the audience what they want, and you've got to give them something that they desire, even if they don't know that that's what they desire. And with Macross TV series, I don't think that people were particularly desirous of.
I remember the first reactions to the announcement that there was going to be a dub. They were like, wait, what? Why?
Why?
Yeah. Why was the...
We have it subtitles. What else do we need?
Well, and I think the sales figures for the Macross dub by ADV speak for themselves.
Yeah.
And that was all at the time of the downslope of ADV, and soon after they were no longer in business.
Yeah, true.
So, was there anything else you're involved in that you'd like to tell us about?
Robotech Shadow Chronicles, and well, I did that, and we still were the reception to that, and shortly thereafter, my involvement with Harmony Gold ended. So,
that's not a coincidence, is it?
No. Well, well, you know, it's, you know, all good things come to an end, and you know, the classic term creative differences.
Yes.
Probably a little bit more than that. Disagreement with you know, the direction of the franchise, and I didn't think decisions were being made the way they should have. I don't think that the direction was correct. I felt, and you get to the point where you don't agree with people that you work with, and one person has to go, and then it ended up being me. I take pride in what I did there. Put together a fantastic CD of the music, virtually the whole entire soundtrack. Did a Robocon 20 event where we brought a lot of voice actors back to honor them. The other work with a website, getting to meet the fans. I mean, I've met most of you through the involvement on Robotech.com, and you certainly, and then...
Well, I met you after I got kicked out.
Yeah.
I met you before I even joined.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But I got kicked out really quick.
But, you know, a lot of fans, and I saw, like, that happening, and I really had a problem with that. I thought that, you know, we have to grow the Robotech fan base. We have to, you know, be respectful of the fans that we have, but we have to grow great new fans, just like Macross right now. You have to get new fans. You can't just rely on the old fans. And you have to create a show. If you're going to do a sequel, you have to service the old fans, but you also have to attract new ones. Yeah.
And it helps, like, and I think this is one of the things that Macross really has, like, going for it. If you can attract cute girls,
yes,
that is always a good thing.
That's a crucial thing, and it's vital. And you know, the results speak for themselves with Macross Frontier. The results with Robotech, and watching Shadow Chronicles, and it was like being on a deck of the Titanic, and seeing the iceberg in front of you, and not being able to do anything about it, And since then, and I'll admit, I'm surprised, I'm almost marking 7 years removed from Harmony Gold. And they still haven't produced anything.
Well, they came out with Love Live Alive.
We repeat, they still haven't
produced. They still haven't produced anything new. And, you know, I was just taking a look at some of the stuff that's come out since... I mean, 2007, January 2007, if you want to mark officially, that was when the Funimation release of Shadow Chronicles came out. And since then, we've had 3 Iron Man movies.
Right.
3 Harry Potter movies.
3 Transformer movies.
3 Transformer. Well, 4th one on the way this summer. Yeah. We've got X-Men First Class, a new X-Men coming out. 2 Captain America movies, 2 Thor movies. The Avengers, or another Avengers on the way.
2 Macross Frontier movies.
Yeah. 2 Macross Frontier. A Macross Frontier series and 2 Macross Frontier movies.
And FB7.
And well, we're not counting Love Live Alive, so we're not counting FB7 okay. either.
That's fair enough. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, with all this, it's great seeing, like, these other things are being lost. And then, you know, Robotech's just kind of fallen by the wayside, despite the protestations of... certain people who want to sound and talk at conventions and make excuses, and that's what they are. You know, in the end, the results matter.
Right.
People will pay to see the product. And if you don't have product to show, you know, what's the point? And you can't make excuses, because nobody cares about that.
Right.
You show us something, and they haven't really shown anything. And that's, I think that's the biggest disappointment, though I think that in some ways it's a blessing in disguise, because, you know, the fans don't have to be disappointed again. It's like better to be disappointed by not having something than to be disappointed by something that was released and then it's as bad as you expected it to be.
Right, yeah. So. Like FB7.
Which is Renato's preferred form of background noise.
Yeah. But there's always hope.
Hey, we had the Bag of Orgas going for us.
Yeah,
the magical bag of Orgas.
Yeah, the Fukuyama trap.
I just have one question about the Macross merchandising.
Yes,
and it's not a licensing thing. Just the superposable limited versions that came in a black box.
Are you talking on the Do You Remember?
The Do You Remember Loved Ones with
the fast packs?
Yeah, the strike armors and stuff that were. I remember. You guys were giving those away at, like, San Diego Comic-Con as prizes. Not just giving away, but, you know, like, randomly giving us prizes and selling them online on the official store, I think.
Yeah, well, we would sell some in the store, after the convention, Those they were like, the Comic-Con, because that was a Toonami thing.
Yeah. How many of those were made? Because they're still giving those away at conventions. That's at least 15 years ago. Maybe. Wow. I mean, maybe I'm off by 2 or 3 years. But
no, it would have been later than that, because I saw the Robotech panel at Anime Expo in 2004, which is where Tommy first announced that they'd gotten the Do You Remember Love merchandising rights.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just thought it was funny, because it's like... Is there a room? Is there a room big enough in Harmony Gold to house all those? They've been clearing those out for like 15 years.
Well, you look at a convention. You go to a convention, and if you're going to give freebies, you're bringing maybe 2, 3, 4, maybe.
Yeah.
So if you spread that out over the couple of years, and you go to maybe, let's say at best a dozen conventions a year, that's, you know, at 40. Yeah. Right? I would say 20 or 40. It's not actually a whole lot of backstock. I'm sure they have a few boxes of that stuff, but I wouldn't say it's like mountains of it, because I don't think that they made a run of that many to begin with.
Really?
Yeah. So I think they have some to give away, but you know, they're not selling them either.
I mean, they're not actually on.
Are they still on the website? Or
I don't believe. I don't know. Maybe I could be wrong. So. I'm not looking, so I could be totally wrong. They might be for sale.
Well, there's not much in the store anymore. Really?
No, there's not, and I can't. You know, we were making a lot when I was there, and we actually had, again, that all had to do with having new product to sell, new stuff, and you know, you would go with the higher ticket items like the Masterpiece Valkyries, because you know you sell those for $80, You know, even if you sold them for $60, you know, you're making, you know, 50% on those based off of the wholesale price. So, you know, if you can sell the big ticket items, you're doing well. If you're only selling little ticket items, you're not making a whole lot of money on it. Yeah. And
Marcus so, keychains, yeah. for instance.
Yeah, but it's, but you see, making money on Robotech is not that big of a deal. Certainly not with what they're doing with it right now. With, like, what's going on with the website, you know. Nobody goes to the website to go buy Robotech stuff. You know, there's just not a whole lot of stuff to buy unless you want to buy a Minmay CD, which is, you know, costs a few pennies to make.
Mm.
So, you know, I think the fans out there want to see new stuff, but they're not getting it. And that's why they'll look and, you know, they'll get it where they can. And if there's good product coming out, maybe if it's coming and produced overseas, they'll go overseas to go buy that stuff.
Yeah.
But I think that's where the tremendous missed opportunity is. And then you've got people going to conventions. The spokesmen for the company are, I think, making a bad showing for the company, to be honest. And if Harmony Gold was paid a little bit more attention to what was going on, they'd be more concerned. But, you know, fortunately, Harmony Gold has many more business interests that are more important than Robotech. Because if it was all had to do with Robotech, they'd be in bad shape. But Harmony Gold itself is, I'm sure they're doing fine.
And final question about toys. This might be right around when you left or a little bit after, mm-hmm. but there was that one announcement that they actually were able to work out the release of the 155s through Toynami with re-engineered heads. Was that after you left?
Or did that actually... Did they release those?
That it disappeared. I mean, it was put out there, and then no one talked about it ever again.
I know. I think that the idea... Because Bandai was released, right? Bandai
was
re-releasing the 155s. Yeah. I don't think that if it did, it wouldn't have involved any kind of retooling of the head. I don't think they would have spent any time with that.
The announcement... It wasn't like an official... I forgot. Was it on the official Robotech site? It was out there basically saying that they're able to work with Bandai. Toynami was able to work with Bandai to use the 155 molds.
Mm-hmm.
And they would also... They were also looking into releasing...
The
1B. Yeah, the 1B, the trainer, with the new head.
Yeah.
Because it was never made before. Oh,
that's right. I don't have any information on that. Yeah. It must have been right after I left, so I didn't have any.
Yeah, it was because I remember I moved at the end of 2007, and this was one of the first pieces of news that I read in my new apartment.
But did they ever release it?
No, it disappeared. They stopped talking about it. And...
Well, that's an absolute shame. Since that didn't have a see that right there, there's a product. Macross fans and Robotech fans would have liked.
I would have bought it.
Because the 155 scale... I think I remember having a conversation with George and mentioning the fact that there was no VF1D. And if we did a VF1D, then Macross fans and Robotech fans would have totally geeked over it and would have totally bought it. See, now that right there, that is a product that would have sold. And the fact that they couldn't make it deal... Because look, you've got players, you've got... Bandai, and you've got Toynami, and you could have struck something. I'm sure you could have had you been smart and savvy enough to do that.
Speaking of things that disappeared, I have a question.
Yes.
Macross 7 Trash.
Yes.
That was supposed to come out.
But that was not coming out in the United States. It was coming out in France.
Yeah, but it was supposed to come out in the United States, and it was Harmony Gold was listed. Mm-hmm. Tokyo Pop was going to put it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Harmony. Then they thanked Harmony Gold, and then suddenly it disappeared.
Yeah, because it was San Diego Comic Con. I don't remember which year.
Mm-hmm.
And how could I forget that it was on that infamous PowerPoint presentation we had seen all these years,
and it's the same
PowerPoint, and there it is, cover of Macross 7, and Tommy saying that Macross 7 Trash, and Tommy saying that Tokyo Pop is, you know, going to release this. So of course after that, I went to the Tokyo Pop panel, mm-hmm. and try to get some questions, but they were like, oh, we can't talk about that right now. And then that was the end of it.
Well, there you go. You've got a responsible company saying we cannot talk about it because you never talk about a deal until it's been consummated. And mm-hmm. then you have Tommy Yoon going and talking about something out of his
stuff
ass.
Which is in talks, but not.
Which isn't in talks, which he has absolutely nothing to do with. And he has no authority to say so on anything, so he shouldn't have been talking about that, you know. And I can tell you that it didn't, Simply Richard, it didn't work out.
Okay,
so the parties couldn't come to an agreement for it, and it was not released.
Okay.
I think it's sad that you kind of lead fans on to thinking something's going to happen and then it doesn't, because I think that's irresponsible.
So yeah, the moral of the story is basically, from here on in, anything that Harmony Gold announces or puts up on his website or something is basically just, this is what we might be doing, maybe.
And we've also learned that loose lips sink ships.
Well, I think that, to Richard, I think you're right on that. But Renato, I would say what Harmony Gold says
what Tommy Yoon
say are very different things. Okay. Harmony Gold, the people who run Harmony Gold, are, and especially their legal people, are very smart people. They're very meticulous
yes.
and detailed people. They're professionals.
Yes.
Tommy is not that, and he's not involved in any of those decisions, and you shouldn't look at anything that he says with any kind of... I would certainly look at anything he says with skepticism.
But the 155s, that was not Tommy. That was an official thing.
Don't know. I'm trying to remember where it was. I don't remember if it was on the official page.
They showed prototypes.
They showed the head thing. There was photos.
So it could have been...
Who made the prototype? Was it Toonami or was it...
Well, it was...
I'm sure Toonami would have been involved.
At that time, Toonami was working with Bandai as the distributor, North American distributor, before they went... with Bluefin.
Now I think I remember because George Song's very, very connected. He's a very smart guy and he knows what's going on. I mean, so whether he was involved or not, for some reason, sides couldn't work out their differences or whatever, and it didn't happen, which again is a shame, you know.
Let's see. Oops. Oh, Robotech.com right there. See,
talking about websites that look like they're from
Toonami Resurrects.
There we go.
Toonami Resurrects the classic VF1, the fabled 155 scale transformable, originally designed by Takatoku to officially return to the North American market for the first time in decades.
How many times can they say official in one sentence?
Wait. I don't know.
Authored by Steve Yoon.
Okay.
What's the date on that?
It's May 5th, 2008.
And that's archived on Robotech.com?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's good. Los Angeles, California. Toonami announced that they will begin distributing classic 155 scale VF1 transformable toys based on the original Japanese molds designed by Takatoku. These toys are highly coveted among casual fans and dedicated collectors alike for their sturdiness and rarity. And now, Toonami will be bringing them around the world at affordable prices. Didn't I just say North American market? What's this around the world stuff?
It could be around the world. Toonami had the toy rights outside of Japan.
Well, that's true.
No, I mean, you got to remember, you put them on the boat in China on the other side.
Oh, no.
They're still on
I'm
that
on a
damn
boat.
Boat.
Yeah. I'm on a boat. I'm on a mother boat.
Are they still on the boat?
Ask Kevin
they must
McKeever.
Still be on the boat. Yeah.
Ask Kevin 6 years later. He's got all the answers.
The VF1 is also widely recognized by Transformers collectors as such as the underlying form of the original G1 Jetfire toy. This release will mark the first time that these toys will be offered officially outside of Japan under both the Robotech and Macross brands. Toonami will begin this summer with anniversary editions of 155 VF1S and VF1J variants and continue this fall with armored VF1A Super Valkyries, as seen in Macross Do You Remember Love?
Wait.
Yes. 2009 will mark the release of 155 Veritex from the Robotech television series, with plans to eventually release all known 155 Valkyrie toys, including rare and exotic variants. They make no mention of the VF-1D here, but they did follow up this thing. This must have been the first announcement. They followed it up
I believe there was
prototype pictures.
It was either San Diego Comic Con,
yeah,
they showed
something
head,
like that.
The head sculpts.
Yes.
They They did show them at some point.
You know what? It sounds to me like someone got cold feet on that. Maybe it was Bandai.
Well, wasn't it just... Well, maybe, because...
Maybe Bandai
like,
didn't...
Like you said, they switched from, I think, from Toyonami to Bluefin, right?
Yeah.
So they did actually release one.
No.
I mean, the distribution deal that they had.
So for a short time, Toyonami was the North American distributor for Bandai products. Like Gundam. Mostly Gundam and probably not Power Ranger stuff. And so at San Diego Comic-Con, the Bandai toys were shown at the Toyonami booth. And that lasted maybe a year and a half to 2 years, and then Bandai switched to Bluefin.
But why such the delay?
During that time, because Bandai, because Mega House is the division of Bandai, Toyonami was able to get the Mega House ride armors and sell those ones, and they're they're the exact same Japanese version,
right?
Except for they put a Toyonami sticker over the Mega House logo.
Fair enough.
Which that's part of the deal. But it was the exact same toy. So they did do something similar to that with the Mospita product.
Yeah, somebody must have just decided that it wasn't worth it, or that somebody somewhere along the line, and I have no idea whether it was someone at on either side of the Pacific.
But again,
someone decided that it wasn't a good idea.
But again, here you have on the official Robotech site regarding a Macross product that we have, you know, in 2009 will mark the release of something, and it doesn't come out.
Yeah, and that, again, that just adds to further disappointment of the fans. And I would like to think that they got that cleared from their... from Harmony Gold legal department.
They also announced 100 scale Elint Seekers and Super Ostriches and stuff like that. That was 5 years ago.
But they put out the 1/100 toys, but I think the toy market and the economy tanked, so they just backed off. Because that's their own engineering and their own molds, where these are just the Bandai molds. So... it would cost them less money to get these out.
This is just distributing stuff, basically. Yeah.
Well, that right there. Again, the 155 scales they're just great toys. I mean, just physically durable toys. They play well. People would have loved them. And that was the thing I remember when the Matchbox toys came out. There you go.
All right.
That was the thing when the Matchbox toys came out. I was furious that those toys weren't released as part of it. And I said, damn Jetfire. Damn the Transformers for putting that out. But a missed opportunity. Another missed opportunity.
Well, yeah. I mean, Carl Masek was talking about that when he did the ANN cast interview, where it was just backstabbing.
Yeah, I think that I think Carl, and that must have been toward the end of his life.
Yeah, that was like a few months before he died.
Yeah, because I got to talk to him about 2 months before he died, and he's a very he understood the industry, and he'd been through a lot. He'd seen a lot of the ups and downs, and he really had an appreciation for, his part in it, and also Macross's part in it. And I think that I think he sees a lot of instances there, missed opportunities for the fans, missed opportunities for obviously his involvement in it, because he would certainly want to be involved in anything that involved Robotech, and I think Macross was something that he appreciated more than people might have thought.
No, I mean that's one thing that I kind of learned later, that you had a lot of people releasing this stuff in the U.S. in the 80s who just didn't care. I mean, it was just kind of like, okay, we got this cheap stuff from Japan. Let's just turn it around, put it on American TV. We can make a ton of money this way. But Carl Masek actually did care about material and wanted to present it in what he thought was the best way. Now, what he thought was the best way and what someone like me might think was the best way might be different, but his intentions were good.
Yeah, right.
Well, I think he was obviously constrained by certain television realities at the
time.
That's
true also, yeah.
And, but he, I think, I argue that the spirit of Macross was kept. Because if you look at the Macross Saga episodes of Robotech by themselves without the other ones, it essentially is a dub.
Yeah.
With just renamed characters. I mean, there is a few little threads that they drop to connect to the other shows.
And a few things that are just kind of changed because he thought it worked better in a certain way.
Yeah. And but essentially, it's still essentially the Macross story.
And, yeah, it is. Which you can't say about Southern Cross. Yeah.
I never had a problem, like, right from the get-go. The moment I saw Do You Remember Love, I looked and said, okay, this is a different Macross. This is obviously, you know, the Japanese have a very different idea behind Macross.
Just like the Hollywood version of Dragon Ball was a very different
Well,
that's an extreme example, but yes.
I think for me, I mean, a lot of it is kind of personal in that when I was a kid, you know, I ended up finding, I mean, you found the Carl Masek Gallery.
Yes.
I just found Little Tokyo. So you were making connections. I was just spending a lot of money.
Hey, I was in Little Tokyo and I was spending my allowance there too, so.
So I was getting these model kits and things and seeing that the names were completely different, and I kind of felt like the crazy person, or kind of like Plato's cave analogy, where I'd like seen outside the cave and I was going back into the cave and telling all of my friends, like, no, it's Japanese, and everyone's name is different. This guy, Rick Hunter, his name's really Hikaru, and no one believed me.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like, okay, he's Rick Hunter, and he's Hikaru Uchijo. Actually, I always made the argument, they were two separate characters.
Mm.
The Robotech story was the Robotech story, and the Macross story was the Macross story, and I never understood why anyone would have any confusion over that whatsoever. I'm talking both sides. Right. I'm talking, because there was argument, oh, well, you know, it's we can't do it because it's Macross. It's like, no, Robotech is separate. Rick Hunter is a completely different character from Hikaru Uchijo. I made this as a legal argument, too.
Really?
I absolutely convinced them that the legal argument was that Rick Hunter was Rick Hunter, and Hikaru Uchijo was Hikaru Uchijo.
Which is why Rick Hunter can show up in Shadow Chronicles?
Maybe that wasn't such a good idea, but yeah. that is what happened. The white hair.
Yes.
That's not how I envisioned Rick Hunter looking.
Well, he looks like the guy from Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah.
You saying that he looks like Bato? Because I find
the standalone complex.
No,
who is Bato? You mean the head, right?
The guy with the crazy white hair.
You mean Aramaki?
Aramaki?
He would have looked better if he looked like Aramaki.
That would have been kind of awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, next up, all the latest news. Renato remembers love, and Adrian goes to the altar of Ishtar.